Al will be forever the myth.
You're the king of kings, Al.
There's always a pecking order. Little peckers never mess with the big peckers. So I'm a rooster, and he's a chicken.
This episode of the Bodybuilding Legends podcast is brought to you by our Patreon sponsors. If you wish to become a Patreon sponsor, please go to the website bodybuildinglegendshow.com and you will see the link in the upper right-hand corner, and you too can be a Patreon sponsor. All right, welcome to another episode of the Bodybuilding Legends podcast, where we talk to the legends of bodybuilding and we also talk about the history of bodybuilding. I'm your host, John Hansen. And on today's show, we are going to be talking to one of the top amateur bodybuilders in the 1980s. His name was Stoney Lee Grimes. And Stoney competed in the USA and the Nationals for many years during the very, very competitive 1980s. And he was also a training partner and a good friend of Lee Labrada when Lee was at his competitive peak and during the peak of his career in the 80s. And then Stoney also went to work for Bill Phillips for EAS and Muscle Media 2000, and he was a sales manager for them. So we got an interview coming up with Stoney where he's going to talk about all of that, about training with Lee Labrada, about all the competitions he competed in, and of course, many stories with Bill Phillips from EAS. So you guys are going to love this, what's coming up in a second. What else is going on in the world, guys? It is now summer. It is getting hot out here in Tampa, of course, as it always does every summer. We are in our very warm season where the humidity is going up, but it's been pretty nice out here. So I hope you guys are enjoying your summer now that we are in it. I know gas prices are super high, so traveling is probably down as far as driving and stuff, but I have gotten back on my diet again. I originally wanted to stay lean after my photo shoot last year and got a little bit off track, as often happens. One too many things coming up all in a row, my birthday, the Arnold Classic. My parents were visiting. We were going out to eat a lot. So before you know it, I got back up to a 36-inch waist, which for me is pretty big. So I'm about 218. And so now I need to come down. So I'm going to diet for the next couple months. And hopefully by August, I'll be a lean 34-inch waist, which is a pretty lean condition for me. So that's what I'm going to be doing this summer, watching my diet and getting lean again, starting to bring the cardio back in a little bit of walking, and I've been really trying to do my yoga more and just stay healthy. You know, with my lower back issues after training for 45 years, the yoga really, really helps. I don't know if any of you other guys are experiencing that, those of you who have trained as long as I have. I'm working on a book, and it's going to be called Looking Great at 58, and it's going to detail the training and diet program that I followed to look really ripped for my photo shoot, which was last year. And I'm going to work on that now. So hopefully I'll be done with that this summer. So I'm thinking it'll be available as an ebook, but it also might be a hard copy as well. So I'll keep you guys up to date on that as I work on that. And other than that, I've just been staying busy with my clients at Pro Physique. And I do online coaching, of course, with prophysique.com. So I've got the link below for Pro Physique if you're interested in being coached by me online with your workout and your nutrition. All right, when we get done with our interview with Stoney Lee Grimes, I got an article I'm going to read from the March 1988 issue of Iron Man magazine. So this was when John Bailick and Mike Nevue had taken over the magazine. John Bailick was the new publisher of the magazine. It had a whole new look. It was a really, really slick looking magazine, a really great magazine. And they had some great contest coverage, unbelievable pictures in these old magazines. But there is an article called Lee Labrada, Masked with Class. It was written by Steve Holman, who was the editor of Iron Man. So this, again, comes from the March 1988 issue. It was right after the 1987 Mr. Olympia, where Lee took third place in his Mr. Olympia debut. So as soon as we get done with our interview with Stoney Lee Grimes, I'm going to read this article because I thought that would be a good match, because Stoney, of course, was a training partner and a good friend of Lee. So I thought, and this was right around the time that they were training together. All right. Before we get to our interview with Stoney, I had a couple emails. So thank you guys for sending me emails. If you're interested in sending me an email about the show or about this particular episode, you can do it at naturalolympia@gmail.com. All right. This first email says, "Hey, John, I'm a big fan of the podcast. It was good to be reminded of the impact of seeing photos of Jeff King in the 80s had on me when I first started working out. I can still remember the gym in England had a collage of photos cut out from the magazines across one of the walls. Jeff King's most muscular and particularly his neck development just amazed me as the 14-year-old I was back then. Mr. Universe was the title everyone knew, too. Thanks for these great interviews and the memories they bring back. I always look forward to the next one. Best wishes, Mike." Yeah, as we mentioned, that interview last week with Jeff King and Matt Dufresne, I think that picture of Jeff doing that most muscular pose from the 1983 Mr. America was just amazing and inspired a lot of people. I know it did with me, too. And like I said, everybody at my gym was talking about Jeff. And I think it was those photos of him from the 1983 Mr. America that just blew everybody away. Jeff's physique was so advanced. And to think he was only 22 years old when he won, that's just absolutely incredible when you think about it today. I got another email here. It says, "Hey, John, good job as always with the podcast of late. Jeff King and his neck are always great guests. And it's nice to hear from the engaging and funny Matt Dufresne, whose name I didn't know as well. Bodybuilding history question for you. I was reading Trevor Noah's book, Born a Crime, and I came across a passage saying that Ray McCauley, a pastor from Noah's youth, who also dabbled in bodybuilding, had placed third in the 1974 Mr. Universe contest, which the book claimed Arnold Schwarzenegger had won. As a dedicated golden era nerd, I knew this wasn't possible, as Arnold was, of course, winding up his string of Olympia wins at that time and was long through with competing in the universe. So my question for you is, what contest could they have been thinking of? Universe coverage online is spotty. The 74 winner appears to have been Chris Dickerson, but I can't tell if McCauley was also in that contest. So I thought I'd go right to the real encyclopedia of modern bodybuilding, you, for an answer. I'm betting you can clear it up for me and Mr. Noah as well. Any ideas? Thanks, as always, Andrew." All right, Andrew. Well, I do have the answer for you. Ray McCauley, who I do remember that name, but I don't remember what shows he won, but I do remember his name from the 70s. He was in the 1974 NABBA Mr. Universe. He was in the pro division, not the amateur. And Chris Dickerson was the overall winner that year of that contest. You were right. And Ray took third place in the tall class. Helmut Reidmeier, who was a friend of Arnold and used to compete with Arnold back in Germany back in the 60s, he won the tall class that year. And Don Ross, the famous Don Ross, who went on to become a really great writer for the Muscle magazines, he was in second place, and Ray McCauley was in third. And then in the short class, that's where all the competition was. Chris Dickerson beat Boyer Coe in that contest, and Tony Emmett took third. Elias Petsis was fourth, and John Isaacs, who was Reg Park's brother-in-law, was in fifth place. So, yeah, the book was right. Maybe they meant that that was a contest that Arnold had won, because, of course, Arnold had won the NABBA Mr. Universe four times from 1967 through 1970. He won the amateur in 67, and then he won three pro titles. But, yeah, you're right. He was done with NABBA after 1970. He never competed in NABBA again after 70 because Joe Weider was not allowing anybody from the IFBB to compete in NABBA. Otherwise, they would have gotten suspended. So, good question. I like that one. If you guys have any other questions for me, please send them along. And also want to mention, I still am working on that book with Lee Haney for the history of bodybuilding. So that's another one of my summer projects I'll be working on this summer. So I'm going to be staying busy this summer, not having too much fun, just working. But it'll pay off with that book on history of bodybuilding and also, of course, the Looking Great at 58. That's going to be a great book. All right, guys, without any further ado, here's the interview with Stoney Lee Grimes, who was the training partner of Lee Labrada and a great national level bodybuilder in his own right. And he will also talk about, of course, his association and his working with Bill Phillips with EAS. Here we go. All right. Welcome back to the Bodybuilding Legends podcast. I have a very special guest with me this week, Mr. Stoney Lee Grimes, who was one of the top amateur bodybuilders in the 1980s. And he also trained with the legendary Lee Labrada for a while. How you doing, Stoney?
Good. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely.
Doing well today.
Good. So were you born and raised in Texas, Stoney?
Yeah, born and raised like West Texas, and then Houston and now Dallas. But yeah, born and raised. I'm a Texan.
Okay, awesome. So let's start from the very beginning. How did you get involved in weight training and then eventually competing in bodybuilding?
Well, I grew up in the industry. My mom had health clubs for like 36 years.
Okay.
She started with women's salons, you know, like back then, the little boutiques, and they had the rollers and the belts, you know.
Yeah.
That was in the 70s, like the Jack LaLanne. And so she ended up having two or three at a time. And then, so we were always around that. And then we actually talked her into opening a gym. And then we went from the gym to a fitness center. So pretty much all my life I've been involved in it. When I was this sophomore in high school, I hurt my neck. And so that was the end of contact sports. So I loved lifting weights. And, you know, my brother was a big football player. He's a lot bigger than me. And I, you know, worked out with them and just got into it. And I was like, you know, I liked it. I wasn't really intrigued on competing at first because, you know, with the little bikini thing and the,
yeah.
So I was like, I don't know about this. And then I kind of, you know, I did it and then I loved it. But at first I wasn't for sure, you know, I don't know.
Yeah.
So, and I knew you had to really get in good shape to put those on. So I knew I had to, right. You know, I had to really get after it. Yeah.
When was your first time?
I got involved. And then, actually when I went to college, you know, I went down to the gym more than I went to classes. And so, I just taught my mom into, you know, doing a gym. I was there a couple of years and then went home and then we, you know, she opened up the gym for my brother and I.
What year did she open that gym up?
It was 83. It was down in Clear Lake, right about a mile from NASA Space Center.
Okay.
And actually, you know who, when I first met, who came in one day to tan was Gary Stridham.
Oh, no kidding. Yeah, he was from Texas.
And I said, oh, my God, who is this guy? He was like, you know, back then. And he tanned and he used to come in and work out. And we had that one. And then we opened one across town in Houston. And that's where I met Lee. My first contest was in Galveston and he was a judge and I didn't fare very well. So I went up and befriended him and just kind of asked him, you know, give me some feedback. And we just became friends from then. And just, you know, we roomed together and I've been around all his, you know, he's been married to Robin forever. His three boys are grown. He's got,
yeah,
one that's kind of electric, one that's the football player, and then Hunter, who's the bodybuilder.
Yeah, wow. How old were you when you did your first show?
24,
okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Was there anybody back then who was, like, inspiring to you to get you to do bodybuilding? Like, anybody you looked up to?
Everybody pretty much. Like, I loved, you know, the Arnold and stuff like that. And then I really didn't know Lee, but then when I met him, and then I got into it and then I just kind of got hooked on it, but it just took me a little bit because I wasn't for sure. But yeah, I just loved all the pumping iron and just things like that. And then when you get into it and you start making gains, you just get addicted to it, you know?
Oh yeah. So what year did you meet Lee?
1983.
83. Okay. So that was 2 years before he won the universe then.
Yeah. And then we roomed together in 85 and then him and Robin got married. Then I moved out and then they got married and then we just, you know, best buddies since, you know, he just opened up a new building for his LeBron Nutrition. And so he's moved across about 5 miles from the old building and the new one's is super nice. He's got a gym in there, actually just really did it for Hunter.
Yeah.
And so his business is booming, you know, so he's been really successful at that.
So what did you think of Lee when you met him? Did you think he was going to be a great bodybuilder one day or?
Oh yeah. You know what I liked about it? He's just very humble and he was very friendly, you know?
Yeah.
Now when we were living together and he was competing, you know, it was a little bit different then, but you know, and then I think he kind of used me to kind of calm him down at times when we would travel and, you know, the dieting and everything. But I traveled for 6 months, 3 months, and then 3 months another time in Europe when he was doing all the, you know, he would do the tours.
Yeah, yeah.
He would just, you know, and I'd go with him and carry his bag. And we went all over England, France, you know, Italy, Germany.
Wow.
So that was the best part about body mills. I got to meet a lot of cool people.
Yeah, wow, that's crazy. So you were rooming with him the year he won the universe then, right?
Yeah, yeah. I was rooming with him in 85. And I remember he was the Nationals. I think it was in Miami, and then he won, and then he went. You know, the smart thing about him was Robin was such a big help. She would always keep his food, and then when he finished the Olympia or whatever, and then he went over to Europe to do those shows every week. Boom, boom, boom. You know, a lot of those guys would just kind of, they didn't have help. And then, you know, Robin helped him, and that kept him in really good shape. And that really helped him with winning those, you know.
Mm. How did he stay on a diet when you were over in Europe? You know, that had to be really, especially back in the 80s, that had to be tough.
Yeah. When we went over, it was he was like the Hollywood star, you know? So when we went to England and we went to different places, the people we stayed with knew we were coming. And so they had all the food right there, you know?
Oh, really? No kidding.
Yeah. So it was kind of, yeah, it was, and we stayed at different people's houses and.
Oh, really?
And it was just, yeah. I still see some on Facebook, some of those big old, you know, those big old English dudes, you know?
Yeah. Yeah.
And it was always fun. We would go, just the people that took care of us, you know, they just gave us the 5-star treatment. It was a blast.
Wow. That's great. Yeah, I did an interview with David Hawk a couple of months ago, and he said he did the same thing. When he went over there to Europe, he would stay at people's homes.
Yeah, just couldn't be any friendlier. And I remember this. I always tell his story. We were in Spain, and there was all these people at the gym to watch him work out. And we were doing legs, and he goes, just really, really take it easy, you know. And I was like, yeah, yeah, yeah. And after about 10 minutes, I went and threw up in the bathroom.
Oh, you did?
Yeah. And then I remember coming home and you come home and there's nobody watching you train. You were like, I liked it better over there.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah. So he was the big, you know, they just loved when he came over there. That was in his peak of his career, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. Wow. That's crazy. Yeah. I did an interview with Lee years ago, and he told me that in this one suitcase, he packed all his water because he thought he would need to bring the water. Yeah. So he put in gallons of water over to Sweden, I think, when he competed in the
Universe. Yeah. Yeah.
And he said by the time he got there, it exploded. And it was water all over the place, you know.
Yeah. Yeah, he was always – one thing about Lee was he stayed within maybe 10 pounds of his competition weight. And
all
he always was so disciplined, you know. And that I really learned a lot from him with that because, you know, I was raised like West Texas, you know, like chicken fried steak. And,
yeah.
And then so when I first started, it took a while to get all that fat off, you know. So it just took longer, you know. And then – you know, competing against some of those guys. Like when I went to the Universe, we competed against the guys from Barbados, and you know, they were raised on chicken and rice, and they're so ripped already, you know. And it took me a while to get down to it, but you know, after that, I was smart enough not to get too heavy.
Yeah. Now, what did you think about your genetics, Stoney, when you did your first show? Like when you talked to Lee, what did he suggest to you?
Oh, it was pretty much just the diet, you know. When I first started with the weights, my brother only let me do power clean, squats, and bench press for a year.
Oh, jeez.
Yeah. And so I got the good, we're blessed with some good genetics, but the training that I did, I got that foundation. I didn't do any of the isolation stuff. I just did that. Mm. And then I had that, you know, and that really helped. I don't know if he knew what he was doing, my brother, but he said, that's all you're going to do. And so that's what I did. And he played football at University of Houston. And so we were in Houston and his friends would come out and they used to pick on me and I would just get pissed off. So I wanted to work out more, you know.
Yeah.
I never was able to whip them, but, you know, I got close.
Yeah. So when did you do your first state level show? Did you do the Mr. Texas or anything?
Yeah, it was in Houston. God, I forget. I won the middleweight. That was my first. You know, I can't believe I can't even, you know, it's been so long. That
yeah,
was my
40
first,
years, right?
Yeah, yeah. That was my first win. And I was like, you know, I just knew, man, I'm really going to like this. And during those days, I was working with Keith Klein and then Lee on my dieting. But I met these guys from Louisiana, the Crazy Cajuns.
Okay.
And so I would work with them a little bit. And then Lee, they were crazy. And then Lee was conservative because I was right in the middle. But man, they used to. I had this guy helping my diet. I've never dieted that hard. It just almost killed me.
Wow. You know, what did they do? Low carbs?
Yeah. It was one of those where you would just eat, and then you would on the third or fourth day, you would come up and just red meat, rice, maybe yogurt, and then you'd go back down, tuna, potato. It was just horrible.
Oh my God.
Yeah, but I got really, really, really lean on that for sure. But yeah, I was. I used to just go to bed chewing on my toothbrush. I was just about to cry, you know.
Right.
Yeah.
Now, were you guys counting calories back then? I know that nowadays everybody counts everything, weighs everything, but I think back in the 80s, that was kind of still new, right? People weren't really doing that as much.
Yeah, not as much. It was counting them, I mean, there was this time where you'd just be smart with it, you know, like the proportions and stuff. But,
okay,
you know, I did different ones. You know, when I first met Bill Phillips, he had the metrics, and I did shakes for one time. And then I did all egg whites as far as my protein one time. And
just did
it with different ones just to find what worked, you know, better.
So, yeah. I remember back in the 80s, it was really high carbs, right? Moderate protein and really low fat, like 5 or 10%
exactly.
fat. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, definitely.
So you did the 85 USA, right? And
I think that was fourth in the middleweight. I was almost like a little bit too tall for the middleweight. And actually, when I would go down to 176, it was really hard. And then one time I just let myself go and I went right up to 198. And then that was a much better weight for me. And I started
So you started doing middleweights and then eventually went to light heavy.
Yeah, I did middleweights to where I just couldn't get down to that weight, you know. That day we're just going in the sauna and doing everything and then coming out and still being overweight. So I just let it go. And then actually that was best for me because I went up to a weight class that was better, you know?
Okay. How tall are you, Stoney?
About 5'8".
5'8". Okay. Yeah. That's kind of tall for a middleweight. Yeah.
Yeah. I'm a giant over Lee. He's 5'6".
Yeah. Right.
And Robin's 5'11". So that's
all. Yeah. I know. So you mentioned Keith Klein. What did he tell you about nutrition? Because I think Keith was kind of ahead of his time, right? As far as being
Coach. He was in that eating management. He's not there anymore, but in Houston, and I can't believe how many people went through there. Yeah, he was he would do my pinch, you know, the body fat percentage, and he's really, really just, I'd say conservative, just your food. And, you know, that was when it was, you started counting and even weighing it then, you know, but he helped me a lot. He was so smart about that. And it's just somebody that just stayed on you, you know, and you'd go in and then he would pinch you, you know, and then he would give you what to eat for the next time and just dial it down to the, you know, to the show.
Okay. So he would do body fat percentages, see where you were. And then
we were all buddies. He was really close with Lee too. So we all hung out. So I learned a lot from him about the eating. Definitely.
Was he helping Lee at the time too?
Yeah. Yeah. He's always kind of helped Lee, you know?
Yeah.
He would bounce stuff off of him. You know, he helped a lot of people. I mean, from obese to Olympic athletes, you know?
Yeah. Was he working with Gold's Gym? Was he the one setting up the programs out there?
I don't think so.
No,
I don't think that he was setting
up. Oh, I'm sorry. I'm thinking of Neil Spruce, I think.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, that's pretty groundbreaking back then because, you know, nowadays there's so many, everybody's got a coach, you know, everybody who talks. Everybody you talk to who competes, everyone's got a coach. No one does.
Everybody, it's different. Yeah, everybody's got a coach.
Yeah.
You know, yeah, definitely. I've noticed that. And sometimes I kind of question the coach when they're like 300 pounds, you know?
Right. But I remember I competed in the 80s too, and it was kind of you were guessing. You know, I would just read the magazines and try to figure out what everybody was doing, and I would try to copy off of them in the magazines, you know? But I remember there would be a lot of times when guys would come in out of shape and it was hard to hit it right. You know, it was hard to finally learn what worked, you know?
Oh yeah. It's same thing. You know, it was just like a learning, like fell a lot that you would succeed. And then I got to where I just stopped worrying about everybody else and just try to get better with every contest, you know,
myself.
It's pretty much, you know, you're obviously competing yourself.
Yeah.
Sometimes you have the politics stuff, but you know, that goes with everything, you know?
Yeah. So tell me about some of the shows you did. Were there any that stand out? I know you did a lot of national shows. I remember reading the magazines and I was always reading about you. You're always up, you know, up in the top five usually.
Yeah. You know, the USA, the nationals, and then I made the middleweight for the universe. And that was
89.
Yeah. We went to France and I was on the team and that was a blast. You know, and they drug tested. So, you know, you had to be off for a while. And so, you know, your frame was a lot smaller, but, you know, we won over there and that was cool. That was really big for me, but mostly just the USA and the nationals. And then my final show was the North American. And that's when I probably was in my best shape. And then Jim Mannion told me I really needed to go to heavyweight. And I didn't have any Yeah, I just didn't have any like drive to do that. You know, I was already sticking myself so much and just to the point where, you know, I was just going to do something else. But that was probably my best show and the last one that I did. I wanted to go out on a winning note, you know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm looking at your contest career here. You started, like, you were doing national shows in 85 and then all the way up till 93. So that's 8 years of competing on
the national. Yeah, 93 was the North American outing out there in California, somewhere on the beach, somewhere, Santa Monica or somewhere.
Okay, all right. So were you talking with Lee, like, I'm gonna be with you in the pros one day? I mean, was that the thought?
You know, that the elusive pro card, you know.
Yeah,
that
was right. Like,
everybody wants to do that, but man, I would just, you know, I would get close, but it was just, you know, like the, you know how the black dudes are so genetically freaked, you know, those are always hard to beat.
Yeah.
And then you would always have somebody, like John Sherman was hard to beat. There was always somebody that you just couldn't get quite up there. And I finally just realized, well, actually my pro card was meeting Bill Phillips. That was my pro card because that was such an awesome thing with my career, with my, you know, financial side and everything. So it was really who I met during my career that was more important than the pro card.
So tell me about that. How did you meet Bill?
It was when he was with Scott Connolly and he came out with, it was Base and Plus, the Metrics. I mean, Mileplex.
Okay.
No, Metrics. Yeah. Sorry, Metrics.
Yeah. And, I remember the Base and the Plus. Yeah. I remember.
Yeah. Yeah. And so Bill had this 1-800 number you could call, you know, he had that little NSA, little magazine, but you know what I'm talking about. And, and he had this 800 number and I would call and it was always busy. And so I wrote him a letter and then he wrote me a letter and he said, yeah, I've been following your career. Would you like to talk? And we started talking and he sent me out the Base and the Plus. And then I really liked it. And then he started sponsoring me. You know, I introduced him to Lee, which was really good for Lee.
Wow. That's awesome. Him. Yeah.
And so, I met him just by, you know, befriending him. And then one day he asked me if I wanted to come out and work, you know, in Colorado. And he just moved me out there. And I went out there and started working in his, you know, his phone room. And then ended up just managing it. You know, the guy was just a genius in marketing back then with the newspaper, you know, and the direct response. And so
What year was that, Stoney?
93 is when I started. I went out and started working with the 93. And then he sold it, I think, in 98.
Okay.
And then 10 years later, I connected with him again. And then we had the transformation community where it was all over and we would meet and do, you know, half marathons for the Make-A-Wish. And we did that for a couple of years. And then, you know, it's been another 10 years. So, yeah, I connected with him twice. So it was really very generous guy, you know, sometimes really hard to work for, but that's why he was good, you know.
Yeah.
He was just so driven, you know.
So you kind of got in with him at the beginning then, right? When Metrics was first started.
Yeah, the very beginning. We just had a little bitty office, and then right down the road, he opened up that big, you know, he went from Metrics, and then he did the Mileplex. So him and Connolly just kind of separated. And so he started the EAS, and then it was huge, and then we had like, 20 employees, and there was like 150. And then it got really big. And I got like a business degree from that guy. It was really, really good. I learned so much, you know.
Yeah.
So it was fun watching it grow. And like you said, very generous. And my wife said, if you would have saved 10% of your checks and said, we would be able to retire. And I did. I didn't save. I wasn't a saver.
Yeah. So what did you learn from him? I mean, he just seemed like a marketing genius from what I could figure out from the magazines and stuff, you know?
Yeah, he would just like, I learned, like he would say, just get started and I'll help you finish, like these different, things he would come up with. But I managed his phone room and I had like 30 operators and there's about 80% female. And we had the magazine was an upsell. And so I just was really good at motivating. And then, he was really, he liked how we would set records and all that and everything. But the thing is that he was, I think I was really good at it because he was hard on you, but he was very, very, very generous, you know? And so, it, you know, when somebody's taking care of you like that, it motivates you, you know, to work. But I just learned a lot about the business side and just working and managing people and just all that. And then I'll tell you what he did that nobody really knows about this is, he would have, well, I think he's still around, Dan Kennedy And well, there's a couple other dudes. And what he would do, he would have them out on a weekend and pay them. Maybe it was $10,000 a day for, you know, they come out for Saturday and Sunday. And they'd sit in his office and they would just go over stuff and he would just take notes. And then they would, you know, they leave and then he would come up with something. That's how he came up with the contest, was from Dan Kennedy, you know. And so he was just getting around good, you know, around people that were really good at that. And then that's why he was good, because he just, you know, that's where he got his ideas from. And then so that, you know, just being around, you know, people that are a little bit higher up and stuff, that they push you and stuff. And then that's where he got his stuff from, the marketing, was from those guys.
Who was Dan Kennedy? Is he a marketing genius?
Dan Kennedy was one of the top marketing guys. He's still around, direct response. Yeah, like a cowboy dude. Yeah, there was a couple other ones that I can't remember. They were the ones that were highly sought after during that time, with just direct response, you know, the mail. And then he used to run the ads in the USA Today and, you know.
Yeah.
And then when it went to the internet, it was different, because, I mean, everybody was new to it, the way we're older in a generation. And so that was a tougher, you know, the
Yeah. I remember he was like one of the first ones to talk about drugs, because he wrote that newsletter or the book or whatever. And that was like a forbidden subject. And so that was very interesting right off the bat, you know?
Yeah. That was really helpful, because he had a lot of good information that I never would have known, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. And then he did that supplement review guide where he was reviewing all the supplements, you know?
Yeah.
And no one had ever done that before either.
Yeah, he was you know, you're standing on top with him, or you're hiding, and when the you know, the machine gun's coming at you and you're hiding behind the desk. And he was, and what he would do was he would take us managers, like he would kill us and he would take us to Vegas, and then he'd give you a few $1,000 to gamble, and he would just, we would have such great time for 2 days, come home and rest, and then it was back to the grind.
Wow.
So when you were working, you knew you're going to get rewarded. You know, we go down there and just have a blast. So it made it worthwhile. And again, he was just really driven. That's why I think he was so good at it, you know?
Yeah. What was your job? So what was your job? You were getting the product out?
Yeah. I was a sales manager for his call room, you know? And then in 2008, when he did transformation, I was just like a coach for all the, you know, for all the people that came on, and we had that contest. And he's not living there anymore, but he lived in a neighborhood. It was like Prince was across the street, and the dude that did the rock star drinks. And then he had Sylvester Stallone and Rod Stewart and Eddie Murphy, you know, all in that neighborhood. And I would just go out and walk every day, because you'd walk it down to the park and try to see if I could get a view of them.
Yeah.
So that was, I would go out there and work for like a couple of days, all the way up to a couple of weeks, and just work, and then come home and go out there. And that was a blast.
Was this California or Colorado?
Yeah. No, California.
California.
Yeah. Up in the hills. Yeah.
Okay.
Denzel Washington was another one that lived there, and walked the neighborhood, and just, you know, he had a really nice place that he had built, and he had a gym and everything. And the ladies there, they'd take care of you. I'd go and they'd do your laundry and cook your food. And it was just world. And then you'd go home and it'd be like, again,
Wow. And Bill was the first one to do the transformation challenge, which now a lot of companies do transformation challenges, but I think he was the first one to do that.
Yeah. I think that's where he got the idea, was from Dan Kennedy. And then he just kind of modified it, you know? And that was fun, because we, you know, I was managing those first. It's so crazy, because I get the first group mixed up with the transformation 10 years later, because it all kind of goes together. But yeah, they had the original one, and then we had one in 2008 with, you know, transformation guys.
Yeah. Well, you were with him then when he started Muscle Media 2000, right?
Yeah. That was back, you know, right around 93, and he started it. Yeah, I used to do a little cornerstone at a little, you know, that I would ride. That was a lot of fun, and just, you know, just watching it take off, you know, everything was just, it was so much fun watching, you know, watching it take off.
Yeah. Yeah. He was, and that was one of the most popular magazines around that time. And one of the things I liked about it was, like I said, no subject was forbidden. He would talk about drugs. He would be honest about everything. And I think that really appealed to a lot of people, because like in the Weider magazines, they would never talk about steroids, you know? So, yeah.
Yeah, and it was funny, because I remember he he would curse a lot. So he had this this fishbowl in his office, and every time he said it, it was like a 20, and he would get mad. And he would do 20s right in a row as long as he's cussing mother effer mother. And then he had this where he was going to get feedback, and I was like, that's not going to be good. And so after the first feedback, then he quit doing that, you know.
Yeah.
He wasn't good. The funny thing, my brother, you know, he's a big old dude. He was really good at football. In the gym, we put this feedback box out, and the first thing was, Bobby Grimes is an asshole. And then he crushed the feedback. And so Bill wasn't, that didn't work out really well, you know. all those guys have, you know, they have an ego because they're just type A, you know?
Yeah. Yeah.
All those guys, they're just, you know, that's the way they are, but that's why they're really good at what they do.
Yeah. So what happened with him and Scott Connolly? They were together for a while, and that's
talking about
metrics.
Just two huge egos clashing.
You know? Oh, okay. Okay.
Oh, a funny story about that. We would have these answer question things at the Arnold, like, you know, during the day. And so he would actually put people, you know, with questions, because Connolly would always go over their head. And so he would get it to where he would actually, you know, talk about stuff that people understood. We kind of had it staged because he was so over.
Yeah.
And what was the dude's name? The blonde headed guy that was, I can't think of his name. He was the third one that was involved. I forget his name, but, yeah, they just clashed, and then they just, you know, separated.
Mm, okay. Yeah, because he was with Dr. Scott Connolly when they were doing the metrics, and they were involved with that, right? Yeah.
Yeah. That was the first time I really did a protein, you know, pretty – you know, all the protein shakes before that just tasted like crap.
Right.
I remember we had that phosphagain. It was in this green 2-pound, and you would burp, and it would just like the burp, but smoke would come out. But the one thing that really pissed me off with him was being a sales manager. We had products he would come out with, and we would do sales, and they wouldn't even do in production. And they would be like, people are so pissed off because, you know, it was on back order, but it really wasn't, you know. But he would get so much demand, you know, and it was hard on us because we were getting all the crap from the customer.
Yeah, you were getting the backlash, yeah.
But I remember he did this we would do this 3-question test on the phosphate game. You had to qualify. So you got to call up, you know, do you work out? Yeah. You know, what are your, your totals? 220, 219.95. Yeah. And so the qualification was like, you know, he just was really good at getting people to buy stuff.
Right.
You didn't really
have
to qualify, but you know, the muscle heads.
Right.
Hell yeah. I work out, you know?
Well, I remember when the creatine came out, he said, it's on, he goes, we haven't released it yet. You know, it's not available for the public yet. You know, yeah.
Yeah, same thing. It just, you know, he created that demand. And when we got it in, man, it flew out of the shelves.
Wow. Did you go on any of the cruises and stuff? I remember they had those cruises.
Yeah. Oh, I went on all the ones that he went on. We went. That was so much fun. It was a Metris cruise, but in the beginning it was, we called it something else, but yeah, those were a blast. Now back then he was very, very, and I think one of the reasons why he liked to be around me was because I talk a lot and I'm just like, talk to anybody, but he was really introverted. And so he was just really introverted back then. And then he kind of came out of his shell, but in the beginning he was, you know, he was very introverted, and then he got to be where he wasn't, but during those cruises and just in the very, very beginning, he was a lot different. But then, it kind of came out, you know.
Yeah, yeah. And then you got Lee involved with it also, huh?
Yeah, I remember Lee called me up. He was smoking a cigar. He met Scott. Scott and Bill met Lee at, I think, the airport he was flying in. Maybe it was the Denver airport. And he signed his deal. And back then, like if they matched his winning, like the Arnold, like 35 grand, then they would match that. So it was like 70 grand.
Wow.
Yeah. And then he got a percentage of, and that back then, man, talking about, and so, yeah, he still talks about that, you know, that was a great introduction.
Yeah, for sure.
I remember I was the only sales rep for Metrics in, Myoplex. I get it mixed up. In the Texas area. And I used to trade that stuff for like other things. Like I could trade out. People are just dying to have it, you know?
Wow, really?
They follow me around everywhere. I'll take that for that. Wow. Yeah.
What year did he start EAS?
1994.
Okay.
Yeah. 93, 94. Yeah.
All right. Okay.
That's when he built the building.
Yeah.
You know, right down the street from the other one in Golden. And I think he's back in Golden. Yeah. I didn't talk to him forever.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. I guess he was really sick with COVID about a year ago.
Oh, man. God, he almost died. That was horrible.
Yeah. Yeah, it was really, he had a really,
I think maybe he's, that was an awakening, I'm sure, you know?
Yeah, yeah. So did Lee decide to do his own supplement line from that? I mean, did he get inspired from that?
Yeah, he was doing gyms, and I remember that they weren't working. Gyms, you know, like my mom will tell you, I mean, they're hard, you know, it's not easy to do those. And there's a lot of, you clean up after people 24 hours a day.
Yeah.
And then, you know, you got to have the right kind of in the right location and, you know, all that. So he was doing, he had one in San Antonio and then he wanted to do the, and he started out, it was MLM for like maybe a few months and that didn't that wasn't doing it. And then he just started with just the regular, you know, Labrada Nutrition, and he just built it up. And I think he had his best year, like last year during COVID, you know, and, he's just, every year he's gotten better. He's got great products, you know, and he's real, the integrity and everything. And, he has fun with it. And so, yeah, he started off just small and just worked his way up, you know, each year.
Yeah. But do you think he was inspired by what Scott Connolly did and what, Bill Phillips did?
Yeah, he was definitely, you know, inspired by how they, you know, did their marketing. Everybody was, you know, that, like when I left there, like I would get all these offers and I'm like, dude, I'm not the marketing guy. I just work.
You
don't want to hire me for that. I mean, I'm a sales manager and I'm good with people, but I am not the marketing guy, you know.
Yeah.
I think it might be rubbed off on me, you know.
Did Lee start his product line after he retired? Is that when he got it going?
He was finished with it.
Okay.
Yeah, he's always been in Houston. The first building he had was over kind of by Willowbrook Mall off of 45. And then he moved it over about 5 miles away. And, you know, and it's really not, the new one's really, really nice. Like I told you, had a gym and he just, you know, kind of just modified the way they wanted it. And, he's got people that have worked there forever, you know, and, he's got a good crew. And when I go down, I always, you know, I go by and, you know, have lunch and just hang out. And then, you know, we're just best buddies. We talk all the time, like his kids, I watched them all grow up. And, you know, Hunter, he's went from just a little kid to just like a beast.
Yeah.
They're all like, his son just graduated from A&M. Like, the kids are smart, you know. And then the other one, Blade, he's an advertising, and he went to UT and got that. He works with, all of them kind of work the family business, obviously.
Okay.
But his kids, all three of them are really super smart, good kids.
Wow, yeah. Yeah, being in the bodybuilding world, we don't really hear about his other sons, but we know Hunter because of his career and stuff, you know.
Yeah, and they're all really good with each other. Like I said, one of them, Blade's kind of, I mean, he's completely different than the other two, but they really complement each other and they support each other, you know. But Hunter's definitely the bodybuilder.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, he's gonna have a great career. He is having a great career.
Yeah.
So what was it like training with Lee? Tell me about that. Like, what was, how did Lee train? I know he was like, he wasn't like a big volume guy, right? He was more of
he was in and out, you know, he didn't like me cause I love cardio and he hated it.
Yeah.
And I always did cardio and I'd always set he was always going to be 10 minutes late. So I'd set my watch cause I knew right when he was walking in.
Right.
But yeah, it was the push pull, just like, you know, in and out, real high intensity. But no, he did not do a lot like people think, you know.
Right.
When he would go out to California and, you know, train for the shows, I think he lived in Marina Del Rey. And I would go out and I had a sponsor and I lived at the Marina Pacific, you know, the hotel there.
Yeah.
And trained for the USA. And we would train in the morning at Worlds and the afternoon at Gold's.
Okay.
You know, every day and go to the beach, lay out, and then, you know, just work out. You know, he was doing the Olympia, and then I was just doing for one of the national shows.
Okay.
And that was a lot of fun because I learned a lot from other guys out there, you know.
Yeah.
you know, got to meet Arnold and all that. And Arnold was, he liked Lee. And and then, you know, Lou was there and Tom Platz. And, you know, it was real quiet in the mornings there. And then you got the girls and it was like loud and crazy.
Yeah,
I learned a lot. And, you know, it was so cool to get sponsored. I was just, I would just, you know, cook my meals, go to, it was kind of not cold as weather, but the people were kind of cold out there compared to Texas. That was the only thing, you know, you kind of get a lonely at times, but Barry DeMay lived in the hotel. And then, the dancer, the tap dancer that died, the black, he, Gregory Hines lived, down the hall from me, and I got to be good buddies with him. And he loved bodybuilding. And
yeah, he did.
Super, super nice guy.
Yeah.
And, you know, Barry was a lot of fun, he and his brother. And so I hung out with them and then, you know, Lee. But there was a lot of good guys out there and a lot of fun. Mike Christian, you know, I got buddies with him. The guys that have been out there so long, you know.
Yeah, yeah. So when you and Lee were training, was it kind of low sets then all the time?
Yeah, it was like the, you know, push-pull, you know, Monday, Thursday, you do your upper, you know, the push and then the pull on Tuesday and Friday and then actually take off Wednesday and the weekends. And people are like, there's no way that he does that. But remember, he's freakish genetics. I mean, his mom and dad are, but his dad's passed away. Well, both of them have passed away, but I would say his dad was maybe 5'5" and, you know, from Cuba. And it's amazing what came out of that. Those kids, you know, Lourdes, his daughters just have biceps and just calves, you know, I mean, his sisters.
Yeah,
and then, you know, Hunter, but he just had such crazy genetics, you know. I mean, he worked hard, but I'm just saying, you know, little bitty, you know, the bones, his knees and structure. And then, you know, he really never got over, you know, 185, 190, you know, when he was, you know, in the off season.
Wow, really?
Just a small guy, but he just would explode on stage, you know.
Yeah, yeah. It's amazing now when you think about it, that a guy like 176 pounds was placing that high at the Mr. Olympia, you know.
Yeah. And now he's this man, I've never seen him. He's tickled to death with Hunter. And we go to his shows and I think he's more excited about him than he was when he competed, you know?
Right.
Yeah. And he doesn't, I mean, the one thing that's cool about Hunter is he doesn't want to be the son. He wants to be himself and he loves his dad and everything, but he really does his own thing. You know, I mean, he'll ask his dad for different stuff as far as, you know, feedback, but he's really does his own thing, you know?
Yeah.
And he's, man, I think he's going to win the Olympia in a few years. I really do.
Yeah. Yeah. I had a chance to interview both Lee and Hunter on stage at the Europa Expo out in Orlando last year. And that was interesting. And yeah, Hunter is very intelligent and he seems like he has his career kind of in mind. He knows what he's going to do because he said he's only going to stay a bodybuilder for so many years, kind of like Lee did. You know, Lee was only a pro bodybuilder for 10 years.
Actually have a plan. He actually has a plan.
Yeah. Yeah. So that was really impressive.
Talking about the shows, back to Bill, when we first started, I think we did the Arnold like 9-10 years in a row. And so when we first started, I remember when I flew, I checked our booth in, you know, at the airport, it was like, and we had it out in, it was the Olympia was in Atlanta. And we paid Anna Nicole Smith to be our booth for the Best Shape of Your Life metrics. That's when she was really popular.
Yeah.
And so we picked her up on the red eye. And she came out. She's huge, tall, just gorgeous. She had her little nanny with her. And so we picked her up and no makeup. And then, you know, she was nice and he gave her money and then she'd go to the hotel. And then when she came down for the show, we had lines around that whole building.
Wow.
With her photos and she would just sign photos and then crazy partying and stuff. And then so that he was really good. You know, we hired her and that was really a fun weekend. But back to the to our booth. So I lost the booth on the way home.
You lost it?
Yeah, it went to some other.
Oh, okay.
City. But I'm saying this is because it started with that. And then about 4 or 5 years later, he had 2 18 wheelers carrying all the stuff.
Wow.
Yeah. You know, the booths just got. Yeah. I mean, it's just how fast it grew. But
yeah,
the first one was on wheels and I actually lost it, you know.
Yeah. It's so crazy how big those expos were and how big he was, how big his, you know, his whole line was and everything. Some unbelievable.
Yeah, 1 year I took my mom, and my mom's, you know, she's tough. She's really cool, but she's straightforward. And so she goes, I want to help. And so she was, you know, put your name and phone number. And I don't know if it was email back then or not. And then you'd get your sample. And
yeah.
So my mom was in line, and she was making sure that she was not giving them until she got that. And he was laughing, and he goes, I really want to hire you. Can you come back to Colorado?
Yeah.
It's funny. So yeah, I took my mom there a couple of times. My brother always loved going to my contests because they were in Vegas or they're out in the, you know, in the boardwalk.
Yeah.
And what he would do, he's about 6'4", 275, 280.
Wow.
We have same mom and different dads.
Okay. And,
so he would come to the show, and it's like always I should win every show. You should come pick, and you know, for his eyes.
Yeah.
And I would have to tell my mom to keep an eye on him because he would just raise hell. And he'd be mad at the judges, and
right.
And I had to have my mom keep him under control. And he actually went because he was just so much fun out there. You know, he'd party, and then him and his buddies, and yeah, he doesn't do it anymore. Yeah. But back then they were crazy, and
right,
he couldn't wait to go to the contest. You know, I said, I know why you're going, because you're having so much fun.
Right.
Another funny story was my mom, obviously she went, and I remember being on the, and my mom will say stuff out of her mouth. I remember being on the elevator, and some of those heavyweight women came on.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I was pinching her. I said, please,
don't say anything.
Don't say anything. So we had a good time, and it was always fun going there and competing in, you know, Vegas. God, that was a blast.
Yeah, yeah. Were there any of those national shows where you thought you should have won, Stoney?
No, I don't think I thought I should have won, maybe placed higher. But what really hurt me 1 year was at the North American was what happened was, and I love Jim Maine. I've always been friends. He's a great guy. But back there's just, it has to do with a little politics. And what happened was Bill was sponsoring those shows, and then all of a sudden he just quit. Well,
wow.
That kind of came back on Lee and I a little bit, because I remembered the North American. I wasn't getting as many looks, like views from the judges. And I'm not saying, you know, it was all because of that, but it was completely different. You know, I could feel it, you know, and that's just the way it was, you know, with that. I mean, that's just the way it is. It's subjective. And, you know, if he's not happy with things, then they're not going to be happy with things. So a couple times that kind of stuff, but that was part of just being with Bill. You know, he was not always liked, you know, by everybody, and and he was crazy stuff, and but he was a huge supporter, and then he cut that off, and it really, I think, hurt them for a while. You know.
Oh yeah, I could see. I never thought about that, but yeah, I could see.
But other than that, I mean, Jim was always, you know, very fair and everything. It was just that 1 year, but I did the judging. I was like the head judge in Texas for a few years.
Oh, okay.
And that was fun, you know, judging all the shows and everything, and then connected to NBC, and I remember. You know, when you're weighing them in, you know, and they're like, I think I just need to cut my water a little bit. And I go, no, you need to cut your food.
Yeah.
You know, with their first show, you know,
it was
always fun judging and getting to travel around and just doing all that. And
yeah,
that was a blast, you know?
Yeah. When you and Lee were training together, would he ever talk about, you know, I got to beat this guy, or would he ever talk about what his chances were at the Olympia? Or talk about some of the other guys?
Yeah, he always wanted to beat Gaspari.
Yeah.
In fact, this is really kind of stupid. It's funny. So Gaspari had God, I'm going to be so embarrassed. I forget his name. Gerard. He has a supplement company. I don't know if he still does on the East Coast, but he was Gerard Dente.
Gerard Dente, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and he was training with Gaspari, and I was training with Lee. Well, he and I hung out. We were good buddies out there. And so Lee was mad at me. And then he was mad at Gerard for us being friends.
Right.
That's how competitive they were.
Right. Right.
And so just stuff like that. He was really competitive with him. I mean, now they laugh about it, but
yeah,
I remember 1 year it was really sad because it was in Atlanta, and he beat Lee Haney, because I was sitting with Lee Haney's training partner. And he said, man, you got to give it to him this year. You guys really did work. I'm going to tip my hat to you. And he didn't win. And I think that was the worst feeling. The worst time for him was he was so close. And it's just, you know, there's just the way things go sometimes, you know.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
But other than that, I thought every other show was pretty much fair. But that one, you know, was just, it was terrible, you know, Atlanta.
Yeah.
Lee Haney wasn't in his best shape, and Lee was at his best, you know.
But was that again, the drug tested one in Chicago?
No, it was. I thought it was Atlanta.
Okay.
Maybe it was Chicago, but it was the year where Haney wasn't in his best shape, you know.
Yeah, that was probably the one. Yeah. Because I think Lee Labrada was placing ahead of him and going into the night show.
Yeah, that's the show. You're right. Yeah, definitely. Yeah. Chicago, right?
Yeah.
Chicago.
Yeah. Did you go to Italy when they competed in Italy, Rimini, Italy?
I went with him where he did the – what member was it? They called it the Grand – or whatever it was.
Grand Prix.
Yeah, every weekend. Yeah. So I went one time with him and Robin on that, and there were several different cities. But when we went on a tour, just he and I, we started in England, and we would do a seminar, and then he would guest pose and he would sell his pictures. Mm. So I had my picture. So he would guest pose and sell 1,000 pictures. I'd guest pose and sell 10. And and then I'd carry his, and then, what happened was, you know, when I first got there, you know, I wasn't in good shape. And I got, ever since we traveled, I got in better shape. And we went from England up to Scotland, and then we went over to Italy, and then we were in Spain. And then
wow. France. What an experience. Wow.
Yeah. And, you know, we just did seminars and, we'd get up in the morning, you know, before we went, we'd get on our knees and pray up, you know, do our prayer.
Yeah.
And I still have people on that I met in different countries that are on Facebook and, you know, say hi. And that was so many years ago, you know.
Wow, really, that's great. Yeah. The seminars and the guest posing were really big back then. That's kind of big too. Yeah.
Yeah. You know, people were so loyal and dedicated to that. You know, if they liked you, man, they were all behind you.
Right.
And the English guys, they were the best, the most nicest guys, you know.
Really?
Yeah. And stuff over there. In their gym, and they would just said whatever you need, and you just spool you, you know. It was great.
Yeah, we always talk about on the show about how social media has changed everything so much, and that's one of the things, you know. I guess because people see the bodybuilders on social media all the time now, it's no big deal, you know, to do a seminar. Like if they do a seminar now, nobody will show up because they see them on YouTube all the time, you know. Or back then, like they never would see the bodybuilders except in the magazine. So if they came to town, everybody would
excited.
Yeah.
Another funny story: we were in France, and I wanted to go out, and then he didn't, so he stayed in. And I went out, and when I was leaving, I grabbed like the matches for the hotel, the address.
Yeah.
And I went to Hard Rock Cafe, and I was there. I was having a blast, and then I was going to turn it in for the night, and I got in the cab. And I gave him the matches, and it was like a Holiday Inn over here, and it was like a generic address. So I spent $60 going in circles trying to find the hotel.
Yeah.
I had really little good tidbit stories. That was one of the ones that was funny. And then the one I threw up working out.
Yeah. No GPS back then, right?
Yeah. And when we were in Spain, and they had crazy nightclubs, you know, and I come on,
let me go.
Really? Gotta go. And just to go out, it was a blast. Just
wow, good old days. Yeah,
and back then that was when you could get the juice over there. And so I would go not necessarily with him, but my ex was from her dad was from the Canary Islands, and so when we go over there, I'd go to Madrid and walk around all day with like my trash bag, and then bring stuff over and sweat bullets at the customs in New York. You know?
Yeah.
But man, it was so like a kid in a candy store. It was just out, you know, over there.
Yeah,
it was like, you know,
everything was totally legal. Right?
Yeah, it's so different nowadays. You know, I don't know what they do nowadays, but it was so different back then.
Yeah, I don't either. I don't even know where they get it from anymore. There's a lot of counterfeit stuff, I guess, going around now. So.
Yeah, I would think, you know, just like the unfortunately, like the foot and all, they put that in the mix it in with.
Man.
So Jesus. You just don't know what you're getting, you know. It's just scary.
Yeah. Right. Do you go to any shows anymore, Stoney? Do you ever go to any local shows?
Yeah, I go to Hunter's as much as I can, you know, and then I'll go down to Lee when he has his classic, you know?
Yeah.
I think I've been to one that the Europa came to Dallas, you know. I try, you know, as long as I'm going to see, you know, the people there that – it's kind of fun to go back. You know, you see some of the same people.
Yeah. Who did you see when you guys were out training at Gold's Gym and stuff back in the 80s? Everybody.
Oh, huh? It was just interesting. You know, I really liked I liked the people at Worlds more because that's where all the a lot of the big guys, you know, trained and just learned and would talk with them and stuff. And then also at Goals, it was just so much different. But they had the equipment was different. It was quiet and then crazy. And so you got the best of both worlds.
Yeah.
And, man, I just soak stuff in and I would just stay in the best shape I could. And then I would get get my first dibs on the, weeder with the photo shoots and the stuff like that. I try to take advantage with that.
Yeah.
The weeder building wasn't far from there. And I would just put myself out there and I got a couple good stuff from that.
Yeah. You were in the magazines quite a few times out in the '80s, right?
Yeah. And it was just from, I was always, it wasn't something where they always came to me. I just was persistent,
Yeah. Yeah.
Wanting to get some stuff out there,
Yeah. We just did a show about Eddie Giuliani who just passed away about a month ago.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. And we had Lee Haney on and Rich Gaspari and Samir Benoot, and they were talking about World's Gym and how great it was there, and how it was so different because Joe Gold ran it and it was no music and, it was so different than Gold.
There.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, and I remember Bob Paris.
Yeah.
Out there. I was just going to tell you a funny story. I'll have to wait till it comes back. It's getting older. I just have those blank.
Yeah. And you saw Arnold out there too?
I know what it was.
Go ahead.
So, Samir was with Lourdes LeBron, Lourdes
and
two girls, they had that Cuban and then his blood, Lebanese.
Yeah.
So I remember when, he was in Houston and Lee's dad did not like that, those two together.
Oh, really?
And she left, and went with him and it was kind of crazy. Lee's father was looking for her.
Okay. Samir told me that too. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, it was. Yeah, I was like, that was some crazy times. And she left and it was like, oh, my gosh, this is not good. But her two daughters are just, man, they're so cool. Beautiful.
Oh,
you know,
man.
So that worked out,
Yeah. How long were they married? They're married quite a long time, right?
No, not quite.
Oh, no.
She's been married for a long time. She's a chiropractor. I think her husband is, too. I forget how long, but it didn't last that long,
But they had two babies, her and
two girls.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Huh. Wow.
Yeah. Lebanese and Cuban. That's quite a.
Yeah.
Yeah. And they
I remember when Lee was coming up, it was wild that he was like Samir's brother-in-law. We're like, wow.
Oh yeah. 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 And they get along. Samir was always good to me. He was funny. I liked, he was always cutting up, like Mike Christian's always cutting up. They were
Up
there.
Yeah.
Yeah, there was a lot of good guys that were really up and they're already up there that were really nice to me,
Yeah, yeah. How was Golds back then in the '80s? That had to be crazy too, huh?
Oh, it was loud.
Atmosphere.
It was much better. I mean, I would much rather have gone in the afternoon there, and because in the morning you're just quiet anyway.
Yeah.
So the Worlds was great, and in the afternoon, they were both good, but yeah, there's the craziness, and they had the. It was so the weather and they had the garage door open and you could come in and out. And then right around the corner was a place to eat. And it was really cool. I loved living out there. But on Sunday, this is when Lee lived in Marina Del Rey and then they would be doing something. And I would just I went down. That was a Catholic church, I think, just to get some warmth, man. It's just like people are just like, all into what they're doing. And Texas is everybody's like the South. Everybody's really friendly and they're not friendly up there. And I was just like, I would be really missing home,
Mm-hmm.
And so I'd go there and go in there and like get some little spiritual boost.
Yeah. Talk to some nice people.
Yeah. When it was time to come home, man, I was ready to come home.
How long were you out there? Like the whole summer?
Yeah. I was out there the whole summer. And like, I had a sponsor, which was really nice. Get the FedEx with the cash in it. Once a month.
Oh, nice. Did you guys do that every year, or was that just like that one year when it was in Los Angeles?
I did it a couple of years.
Okay. All right.
Yeah.
Cool.
Yeah. And then, going out there and just to try to get the photo shoot work and everything.
Yeah.
And the Marina Pacific was so awesome. It was right there.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that's such a people watching area.
Yeah. Yeah.
Just go down there and watch people. It was And yeah. Man, it's, everything's changed so much. It was, God, it's been so long ago, but, and I remember Barry was trying to get his, he was married. He was, I forget her name. She cut hair, but he was, he's a hilarious Barry DeMay.
Yeah.
His brother. And so we would, I remember he went to my show, one of my shows. I think it was USA. And you know how when you're up on stage and, you know, if you're like, if you were helping me and you were saying abs, you know, your abs. Well, he was telling me in Dutch. And so like Dutch, you hear out, you know, like if it's American, you just kind of you forget it. And he was out there. He taught me some Dutch and he was screaming, you know, hit my abs.
That was a good idea.
He was a lot of fun. I think he's doing photography now. I'd say hi to him every once in a while on Facebook.
Yeah. He's in great shape, isn't he? He just turned 60.
Yeah, man.
It's some pictures from like when he was competing back in the day.
Yeah.
Even when he was 19 until he was 60. It was amazing. Shape right now.
Yeah. We would always go and try to get the new haircuts and he was just always a ball of energy, you know, so was Lee, but Lee, you know, he was not quiet. I mean, he was a little bit quieter and Gary was loud and I always just like hanging out with him and living right there. And then, you know, Gregory Hines and it was cool. Well, I'd have some long conversations with him and I would ask about his stuff and he would want to know about bodybuilding.
Yeah. He loved bodybuilding. He would go to all the shows all the time.
Yeah. It was sad when he passed away, but I was wanting to tap dance in the kitchen, you know. Those are little bitty rooms. They have the kitchen, you know, the kitchen here and everything.
Well, you probably had to keep Lee up all the time, right? Because he was training for the Olympian stuff. So you were his partner. You probably had to like – that's a job in itself just to keep him motivated and keep him
– Oh, yeah. We always did – you know, we did good together with that, you know. We kind of kept each other even keeled and – you know, and just pushing each other, definitely, because that's so hard, you know, when you're coming down and it's good to have somebody right there that, you know, will just keep you where you need to go, keep you on track.
Yeah. Did you ever see Lee when he was doing his posing? Because he's so renowned for his posing now. I mean, even, you know, 30, 40 years later, people are still looking at his routines. Did you ever get to watch him when he was creating posing routines?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah,
he would help me with mine and I would watch his and just kind of take notes and, Keith Klein, Cookie, he was married to Cookie and she was a dance instructor.
Go to
her place and she would help us with music mixing and he's really works with Hunter on his and he's really still just like dialed into all that, but it was always great to have him around to help with posing, you know, because that's the last bit of so hard at times, you know.
Yeah, that's an aspect that's kind of overlooked now. Like, not too many of the bodybuilders are good posers. But there's a guy in classic physique, Terrence Ruffin, who's one of the top guys.
Yeah,
he won the Arnold this year. And he always looks up to Lee as his idol. You know, he wants to learn from Lee as far as the posing goes, you know.
Yeah, yeah. And it's so much different. It's so, it's just classic. You know, he was always classic.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was really good to have him because that was such an important part of it.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, he was amazing. And I remember watching the one from Italy. He had two songs in a row.
Yeah.
Different songs. You never see that anymore. I mean, the posing routine had to be 4 minutes long. It was amazing.
Yeah. I do remember that. Yeah.
Yeah. Any other guys that really stood out to you back then, Stoney, from all those years of training with Lee and around the Mexican?
Yeah, there's just so many, you know, that the ones that I named was just the ones I was around a lot. But I was always just soaking stuff in, you know, like I was always trying to get better and I would just learn from different people. I mean, Lee was a main guy, but I wanted to learn as much from, you know, I got so much from this and that. And, you know, with training and there was so much knowledge out there, you know. And So I just try to soak up as much. And so. I tell you something. This is funny. So the other day, Lee and I were on the phone and we were talking about prostate problems. And we just started laughing at how it's so changed.
Yeah.
You know, talking about your shape. Hey, man, how hard are you? And all that. And then it gets to your prostate. Man, I could pee in. I go pee every 5 minutes or whatever. Right. Just busting out laughing, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah, but yeah, just it's crazy how you just, you know, as things get older, you get older, how things change. But
yeah,
I live right by the Y here, like about 5 minutes away, and I go there, ride the bike, you know, and just do my push pull routine, just not the heavy weights, but
yeah,
you know, when you grow up in a gym and you work out, it's just like, you know, it's just like brushing your teeth. And
yeah,
if I don't work out, I just feel like crap, you know?
Right. So, right.
My wife, we have a little gym in the house. She doesn't like to go, so she works out here.
Okay. Then
my bulldog right now, he's snoring over there.
And what are you doing now for a living, Stoney?
For what now?
What are you doing
for a living? Yeah. I do drop shipping. I sell products on Amazon and some of the other, you know, platforms. Yeah, I've did that for a while, and then some other little side hustles.
Okay.
So much you can do, you know, today.
Yeah. How long you been married now?
10 years.
10 years, okay. Yeah,
great gal. She did first one to never take any crap, which is exactly what I needed.
Right.
Yeah, she's a finance director for the National Breast Cancer Foundation here in Frisco, and she's been there 10 years, and she's got a team, and she loves her job, so it's kind of cool. She's really dedicated to that, and then, you know, we both work from home, and so Crimson, my bulldog, and so we have to. She used to work there, but after the COVID, she came home, and so we have to, you know, dial our playing times in.
Yeah,
we get in trouble. I'm too loud.
Yeah.
So yeah, she works from home, and she's got her family's in Louisiana, and she's really a family girl. So we go back and forth with that. She's got a couple of nephews she watches, and and then my mom is she's 83, still in really good shape. She has some back and neck problems over the years, and then my stepdad, who's like my dad, they live out in Clear Lake still, and they're they're retired to go see them, and then my brother's out there, stepbrother, and then other family members. And then I got a lot in West Texas, all the my kin folks out there, all the farmers and, you know, cotton and cattle and all that. Yeah. All over. Yeah.
Yeah. Lee's staying in great shape too. Talking about.
Yeah. He's always
amazing.
Yeah. I don't think I've ever seen him, you know,
out of shape. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's interesting that he never got fat. He always stayed lean.
Yeah, it is. Yeah. I mean, from the very first time we lived in an apartment for like 6 months, and then we got a house out there. We were just renting it, obviously. But I was like, you know, even when we went and ate, he was, you know what it is? His discipline is unlike anybody I know, you know,
yeah.
And that was his key. I learned so much discipline from him. Because I mean, there'd be times where, you know, you say, man, you got to cut back in the off season, you know, because I get out more, you know, I was like crazy when I party and do all that.
Yeah.
And so I learned to cut back, you know, with him being, you know, just having somebody that's honest with you. And so that kind of, I got the discipline from there. And then I did better because I stayed closer to my weight, you know?
Yeah. Okay. That's interesting.
Yeah.
Probably that helped him with his business too, with the discipline, you know?
Oh yeah, definitely. One more funny story. So when I was doing the diet with the Louisiana dudes, I remember I was coming down. I was so hungry, and one night I just busted out and I ran down. I was ran down to the grocery store like on aisle 8, and I was eating powdered donuts. And so when I went to Colorado, we did a little article, and that was like Bill knew about the powdered donuts because he was sponsoring me then.
Yeah.
And, we did like a little article, and like my buddies, they were all looking for me, and they go, Bobby's probably at the grocery store. I just couldn't. I was just so beat up from I think the hardest part, like what I would do is I would get somebody that was a little younger and stronger. And I would like pay him, and he would stay in like for the 12 weeks, and he'd help me cook and work out.
Okay.
Yeah. And so it made it, you know, I mean, because Lee was across town, you know, I still were connected, but I would do that. That would really help me with somebody pushing me and everything.
Okay.
But the diet sometimes was just, you know, obviously, you know, that it just gets to be where it's just so hard, you know, wears on you.
What were those guys called? The Crazy Cajuns?
Yeah, they were from Metairie. Panabiego was one of them. They competed too. They were just, I mean, he would, like, I would fly down there, and then I'd go to the gym, and he would just look at you, and then he would just do the diet. You got to cut back here. Look, this is crazy, but I was trying to qualify for the USA, so I went to Arkansas, and mm-hmm. I did this show, and he goes, if you win overall, you can have this yogurt. So I won my class, but the heavyweight won, and so I went to the hotel room, and I called, and I told him, you know. And then I hung up and I went to get the yogurt and he called me back. He goes, you know, you can't eat that yogurt. Just crazy guys. And then they were a little bit more crazy, you know, cut your food and then jack your juice, cut your food. And so, and then Lee's so conservative and these guys are so crazy, you know, kind of get, I picked up stuff from them, but I only did that for like a year. It was just too hard on me, you know?
Yeah.
But I was in definitely the leanest I've ever been, you know, for sure.
Oh, really? Yeah.
Yeah, I was like 168.
And what were they doing? Just cutting your calories super low?
Super low. And then what you would do is you would, you know, you'd go low and then you would have the eat day where you come up. And I remember it was Thursday before the show. I had like 4,000 calories. And then, you know, because we timed it in and 4,000 of red meat, rice, and yogurt. Frozen yogurt. And then that Saturday I was in like the best shape. It's just because you just timed it in.
Yeah.
So you eat sooner. As the leaner you got, your up day would be sooner. And then they it's a crazy diet, but it worked really good.
The first crazy contest prep coaches.
Yes. Yeah.
Wow, that's crazy. Well, I'll tell you, Sonny, you competed during some tough shows. I'm looking at these contests you went in. You did the 87 USA. That's one Mike Quinn won, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. And then 88 Nationals, that's when Vince Taylor won. And the USA, that was John Defendis won that one, right?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Man, yeah. I'm glad you went over that. It's been so long.
Yeah. That was in Vegas, right? The USA that year?
Yeah. It was in Vegas.
And the 89 Nationals, that was – Zuccolotto won that one, right?
Yeah.
But you were drug-free, right? You went in drug-free in that one to go to the World Amateur Championships?
Yeah.
Okay. Then you did the USA in 90. That's the year they tested also, right? Didn't they test in 90? They were testing all the national level shows?
I think my mind went blank. I think that's the one that that I qualified for the universe.
Oh, okay.
Because when you got over there, I mean, I obviously had to stay for a while. And then when you got over there, obviously you did the urine test.
Yeah.
And then all the other guys from the different countries, they stayed on because they had the blockers and all that. But the USA didn't want to mess with that, you know.
Right.
They still beat them, but they didn't want to get into that, you know.
Where was that World Amateur Championship?
It was in Paris.
Oh, in Paris. Okay. That's cool.
Yeah, it was, man, you know who passed away was the light heavyweight, Ronnie Schwier.
Yeah, I saw that recently. Yeah, he was from
Paris. And he was another genetic freak because we used to work out together and he could eat, you know, a burgers and a fry. He used to piss me off or 10 ice cream sandwiches. And then he would just never
get drove fat.
Me crazy. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, I was really sad. He kind of quit keeping in touch. And then he just said he was not with anybody. He was just, you know, he wasn't. Just the last final. Yeah. So I kind of lost touch with him.
Yeah. Yeah. That was cancer, right?
Yeah.
I remember him when they said he died. I definitely remembered him because he was a great national competitor.
Yeah. Good poser and just
good closer. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. He went drug free too, I think. Didn't he do the World
Championship? Yeah. All of us did for that, for that show because obviously we were tested over there and we all passed, you know.
Oh, he was on the same team as you?
Yeah, he was light heavyweight. Okay. I was middleweight.
Okay. Awesome.
Yeah.
Wow, that's awesome. All right, Stoney. Well, I won't keep you. I just want to thank you for joining me and telling some good old stories from the old days.
Yeah, man. No. Thanks for having me. I really appreciate it. Honored to be on here. You know.
Yeah. Well, I definitely remember you from those days. So it was great to connect with you and talk to you about those good old days of bodybuilding back in the 80s.
Yeah, it's fun to talk about it. Definitely. Yeah. I really appreciate it.
It was great meeting you. Great talking to you.
All right. Bye-bye.
All right, buddy. Take care.
All right. You too.
All right. Thanks for listening to another episode of the Bodybuilding Legends podcast. Thank you to Stoney Lee Grimes for coming on the show. I really enjoyed that interview. I never got to meet Stoney before, but of course I knew of him from reading the magazines back in the 80s.
And I just wanted to go over real quick. We didn't really cover it in the interview, but I wanted to mention some of Stoney's top placings in the competitions. In 1985, he was only 15th at the Mr. USA contest as a middleweight. That was the year that David Hawk won it. And then in 87, he moved all the way up to fifth in the middleweights at the USA. And that was the year that Mike Quinn won. In 1988, Stoney went back to the USA again. And this time he moved up to fourth place. And in the Nationals that year, he took seventh in the middleweights. And then in 1989, he was 10th in the middleweights at the Nationals. But as he mentioned in the interview, he did qualify to compete at the World Amateur Championship. So he was drug free for that show. And then at the World Amateur Championships, he took 11th in the middleweights. And then in 1990, he went to the middleweights in the Mr. USA again, and he took 8th place. And then in 1991, he went up to the light heavyweight class at the North America, and he took 3rd place. And then finally in 1993, which I believe was his last year of competing, he got 6th place as a light heavyweight in the North America, and then 11th in the light heavyweight at the USA. So I just wanted to go over that for Stoney's record, competitive record. All right. So let me read this article for you guys. It's called Lee Labrada Masked with Class. It was written by Steve Holman in the March 1998 issue of Iron Man magazine. It says, I remember seeing Lee Labrada in 1984. He was guest posing at a regional contest in Houston after winning the Mr. Texas in 1983. Lee was pretty much a celebrity around the Texas bodybuilding scene. And although he was Mr. Texas, Lee was far from acting like a high and mighty know-it-all. Tom Platz can certainly attest to that. You see, Tom Platz was scheduled to guest pose at that same Houston contest, and Lee was definitely ready for him. No, he wasn't planning to blow Tom off the stage or show him who was coming up the ranks to teach him a lesson. Lee was ready to learn. When the time was right, Lee sat down with Tom and assumed the role of a wide-eyed student, grilling Platz for all he was worth. Lee was hungry for information on training, diet, and everything else pertaining to the sport, and he knew Tom could provide it. Lee takes a very scientific approach to training, observing, asking questions, and absorbing knowledge. This scientific and logical demeanor comes from being well-educated, he has a degree in engineering, and from the fact that he began serious training in the late 70s when Mike Mentzer was making his mark on the bodybuilding world. Much of the Mentzer philosophy rings loud and clear when Lee talks of his own training beliefs. The manner in which most bodybuilders train will never allow them to take advantage of their full potential. The majority of bodybuilders overtrain. The muscle must be trained as hard as possible within as short a time frame as possible, and it must be trained until it loses the ability to contract any further. But Labrada isn't simply following the Mentzer lead. He has taken all the available data on building muscle and put it through the ringer. With the ideas of people like Mike Mentzer, Tom Platz, and many others, he has shaped his own philosophy. Lee never takes anything at face value. He knows bodybuilding is rampant with fallacy and that you've got to weed out the truths. In other words, you've got to think. Listen to his logic. Bodybuilding is full of hand-me-down traditions. Don't be afraid to question generally accepted truths. You must experiment. Lee has given all of his philosophies a lot of thought, and he has experimented, separating the things that work from the hearsay. He's been down a lot of dead-end roads in the past until an important lesson finally slapped him in the face. You can't put the thought processes on hold if you want to succeed in bodybuilding. Doing something simply because someone says to do it is wrong, dead wrong. Trainees need to ask why more often. They should know the reasoning behind the principles involved before they waste precious training time on them, because considering how long it takes to make it in this sport, time is everything. With this in mind, Lee has made sure that his system allows the most muscle growth in the shortest amount of time. He bases his system of training on 3 things: basic exercises, variety, and recuperation time. Lee tends to center his workouts around the basics or compound movements. Why? Good question. Because these are the exercises that involve a number of muscle groups at once, making them the best movements for mass. Lee sticks to these basics, hitting rows, presses, pull-downs, squats, and leg presses with heavy weights in every workout. But although these exercises are mass builders, he sees a weakness. The arms are a weak link when working the torso, and the lower back is a weak link when working the legs, squats. These weak links can tire out before the efficient target muscles, making the movement less. With the weak link in factor, Lee usually does an isolation movement first to pre-exhaust the target area. For example, when working delts, he will do three sets of laterals before he moves on to press behind the neck. Or when working the thighs, he'll do three sets of leg extensions before hitting the leg press. But this isn't a set rule. Every so often, he will do the compound basic movement first for the sake of variety. Although Lee intersperses the basics throughout his routine, he's a firm believer in variety. Why? Now you're getting the hang of it. Because doing the same workout over and over is one of the fastest ways to a rubber room. Plus the fact that the fluctuation of stress keeps growth continuous. On one chest day, he may do bench presses after flies. The next chest day, he might do Nautilus chest followed by incline dumbbell presses. Then the next chest day, he may do dumbbell bench presses followed by incline flies. The most infinite combinations make the job at hand much more enjoyable. But his workouts aren't all fun and enjoyment. He also has to endure pain, lots of it. Every set of every exercise is taken to failure. Once in a while, Lee will even employ force reps, but he feels these can overtrain, so he uses them sparingly. With this push-to-the-limit training, recuperation time is crucial. Why? Because proper recuperation means growth. Growth is a cellular adaptation to the stimulus of weight training, which occurs during rest. It usually takes 72 hours for a muscle to completely recover from a maximal workout. For example, if the biceps are worked hard on Monday, they will not be recovered until Thursday. Working them before Thursday would be counterproductive, causing stagnation and perhaps even growth reversal. As you can see, the whys are answered in every case. By combining all of the reasoning, Lee has developed a very logical training approach. He usually does three exercises per body part and three sets of each exercise, except for arm exercises when he uses two sets. Let's see, that's about nine sets for most body parts and about six sets for biceps and six for triceps. Very efficient. He usually trains 4 days a week, doing chest, shoulders, and triceps on Mondays and Thursdays, and back, biceps, and thighs on Tuesdays and Fridays. Also keep in mind that Lee changes his program almost every training day. As for abs and calves, Lee has a slightly different philosophy. He hits these two body parts every other day, even if it means going into the gym just for a special ab-calf workout, like on Wednesday. He does two exercises of three sets each for both abs and calves, and he alternates a high rep workout, 20 to 30 reps, with a medium rep workout, 12 to 15 for each. Why? Because of their constant use in day-to-day activity and resulting denseness. They must be worked in a unique manner, hence the higher repetitions. Lee's strategies have been highly effective. Take a look at the 87 Olympia results if you've got any doubts. Lee finished in third place only 3 years after his little learning session with Platts. It's ironic to note that Tom Platts didn't even qualify for the 87 contest. Lee has managed to leap past many of the greats in the sport, including Tom Platts, one of the most respected influences, with logical training, open-mindedness, and a lot of help from mom and dad in the genetics department. Lee's captivating stage presence hasn't hurt his rise to the top either. On stage, Lee is reminiscent of Mohammed Makaway in presentation ability as well as height and build. He has the symmetry, proportion, plenty of muscle, and to top it all off, a lot of charisma. Not since McAway has such a symmetrical short competitor really riled up the big men. If my reasoning is correct, and I'm actually a pretty logical guy, then the Labrada era is definitely on the horizon. Why? Because he's got mass with class. That's why. And then it's got training tips here from Lee Labrada. Rest only as long between sets for your partner to do his set, or intensity will drop below desirable levels. Work legs last, because if they are worked first, you will be tired out, not able to do justice to the other muscle groups. Also, if worked first, the thighs pull a lot of blood from your body, making a pump in other body parts difficult. On peak contraction movements, where there is resistance at the top of the repetition, squeeze hard for 2 to 4 seconds before lowering the weight to work as many fibers as possible. Take every set to absolute muscular failure. Go through the pain barrier. You won't grow unless great demands are made on the muscles. Use various foot positions and hand positions for increased variety. Focus and visualize on every set. Concentrate to maximize muscular contraction. Use force reps every so often, but not too often, or overtraining may result. Vary the workout every training day for fluctuations of stress and to fend off boredom. Use pre-fatigue often, doing sets of an isolation movement before the basic compound movement, to take the weak link out of the basic exercise. All right. And of course, Stoney mentioned some of his training philosophy or his training experience with Lee when they were training at Gold's Gym out in California, and they were training twice a day. That's hard to believe that Lee was doing legs, back, and biceps in one workout. That's a really tough workout. I did that workout myself when I was like in my early 20s, but hard to believe a professional bodybuilder would do that because legs take so much work. But I think if I remember from reading what Lee said, I think he did modify that a little bit to where he was doing legs on its own separate day. But I know he was a believer in training like Mike Mentzer and sort of like Dorian, where he was doing lower sets and he was only training 4 days a week. I do remember that. But good article from the great Lee Labrada, one of the greatest bodybuilders in the 1980s. And it was great to talk to Lee on my podcast as well. And he is still looking amazing at 62 years old. Lee was born in 1960. And I just saw some pictures of him recently on Facebook. And man, he is in fantastic shape. And like Stoney said, he's got those great genetics, but he never gets out of shape. He's always in shape. He always has been. So again, thanks to Stoney Lee Grimes for coming on the podcast. And hopefully we will be back next week with another interview on the Bodybuilding Legends podcast. Thanks for joining us for this episode. Take care out there, train hard, and we'll see you guys next week. Take care.